Today, first-time buyers in Wonderland. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, now this post covering finance and property news. Today, I want to share the latest analysis that we've done relating to first-time buyers and their use of the bank of mum and dad. Actually, this was triggered by a conversation I had with Tarek Brooker in my recent show, in fact, last Friday, which is running very well, by the way. Check it out if you've not seen it, because we cover a lot relating to the Australian economy. But one of the questions he asked me was, what's the story with regard to first-time buyers and their use not only of the bank of mum and dad, but also the use of the other schemes that are available across the country? And so I pulled out some further information, and today I'm going to share that information and also update you with regard specifically to the question of, well, who is really paying to enable first-time buyers to get into the market? Oh, and by the way, in case you wonder, it's mostly taxpayers, as well as the bank of mum and dad, of course. Now, to start this conversation, let's just quickly look at the number of new first-time buyer loans per quarter per the ABS, and you can see that it's hovering somewhere around 30,000 loans over each quarter. Unfortunately, they now only publish this data once every 3 months. They used to do it monthly, so it's rather lagged. Looking at the total value of new first-time buyer loans per quarter, it is continuing to rise. And no surprise, when you look at the average new first-time buyer loan per quarter, is around $555,000. Now, that's an average across the country. It's a lot higher, for example, in New South Wales. And I've been pushing on this issue of the expanded First Home Guarantee Scheme coming in 1 October. I made a couple of shows last week about that, where first-time buyers will be able to purchase property with as little as 5% deposit. The expanded scheme removes some income limits and changes the property price caps to make it available to more first home buyers. And of course, the government will now provide a taxpayer backed guarantee of up to 15% of the value of the home loan, eliminating the need for lenders' mortgage insurance, and so significantly reducing the time it takes to save for a deposit. Here are the latest data points that I could find with regard to the changed price caps. And you can see there that effectively the cap is up significantly in New South Wales, both across the state and particularly in the capital city areas, up in Victoria. No change in other areas of Victoria, up in Queensland and in Western Australia. And South Australia, recognising, of course, prices have risen significantly. To be eligible, got to be an Australian citizen or permanent resident, at least 18 years old. You must be a first home buyer who's not owned a property in Australia in the past 10 years. And you must live in the purchased home, and you can apply via the banks. Although, as we'll discuss next week, there are some catches. There are other schemes too, of course. There's the shared equity scheme, which is where the government can contribute up to 40% of new homes and 30% for existing homes. And the launch is still sort of in the works. And the idea is to, again, help first home buyers. Minimum deposit on this scheme is just 2%. And there are income caps, and again, issues with regard to being a citizen. And of course, the government's equity contribution is based on the property values at the point of sale, so just be aware of that. And overseas, by the way, these have not necessarily been that helpful. We've also got the First Home Super Saver Scheme, the FHSSS, which allows you to save money for a deposit inside your superannuation fund, which can offer some tax benefits. In addition, of course, there are also state and territory schemes, and these are very much in addition to the federal government scheme. So in New South Wales, there's a $10,000 grant for buying or building a new home value up to $600,000, or a home loan and package up to $750,000, and also the First Home Buyers Assistance Scheme with stamp duty exemptions. In Victoria, there's the First Homeowner Grant, and again, stamp duty exemptions and concessions. In Queensland, There's also the first homeowner grant there. And in Western Australia, South Australia, Tasmania, the ACT and Northern Territory, there are concessions too. So my point here is that there are a range of different schemes available inside the government structures, both federal and state level. Now, of course, those all cost. I've done some work trying to total up the amount of taxpayer funds and other money that's caught up in these, but actually the disclosure is so low, it's impossible to estimate what the real amount is, which is an interesting and concerning issue. I do know, of course, that if in fact values go down, now taxpayers will be on the hook potentially for that lender mortgage insurance proxy that is now part of the new scheme. And I suppose in some of the other schemes, if in fact the share equity model doesn't work because prices don't rise, then that could be a problem too. So it's really hard to try and actually crystallise how much money is being thrown at first-time buyers. But the net result of all this is it's a lot. It's a big amount. Which takes us then to the Bank of Mum and Dad. Now, I've been studying the Bank of Mum and Dad for years because to me it's a really important element within the story of property in Australia. If you've got parents who are sitting on equity in their property or who are affluent in other ways, they can throw money at their kids and allow them to buy. And more first-time buyers are relying on the Bank of Mum and Dad. Interestingly, of course, Michelle Bullitt was asked relatively recently in Senate estimates about the Bank of Mum and Dad, and she said, didn't really study it, wasn't important. Well, I think that's a mistake. To me, this is another very important factor in looking at property, not least because it separates the sheep from the goats, those with families, with funds that can help the first-time buyer to get in, has a much better chance of buying a property compared with those who don't. And in fact, it means that there's an intergenerational wealth trap here as well. So it's worth trying to understand the current state of play with regard to the family bank, as I'm going to call it, because actually it's not just parents, as we'll see in a second. So let's look at the current state of play. This is from my modelling, and you can see here that the number of Bank of Mum and Dad first-time buyer users over the last quarter, this is to September 2025, based on my estimates, is around 20,000 purchases. 20,000. And as a proportion of all first-time buyers out there in the marketplace buying property, it's at 62%. And you can see that there was a dip quite recently, particularly through 2023, partly because prices weren't rising and partly because interest rates were rising. And you can see that we're pretty much now back at 62% at all-time highs. So, of all transactions in the first-time buyer sector, 62% are facilitated by the Bank of Mum and Dad, or the family bank, as I'm going to call it, and that is around 20,000 currently, and you can see it's actually rising. The next question then is, how much is it worth? Well, if you look at the average size of the amount supported, if it's helped with a deposit, sometimes the Bank of Mum and Dad provides other support like interest payments and those sorts of things. But if you look at it, you can see here that the average value across the country in September 2025 was $119,000. It's close to $120,000 again, where it was back in 2021. There's more to this story, of course, if you started looking across the states. I'm not going to do that here, but in New South Wales, it was nearly double that. The next question to ask then is the question of, well, who is providing the funds from the family bank or the Bank of Mum and Dad? And of course, it's mostly parents. Parents consistently are providing the funds. And you can go back in history to 2015 and see that all of Bank of Mum and Dad was coming from parents. But now it's just 76.45% from parents. So you can see that it's been dropping. The reason it's been dropping is because grandparents have been contributing more, up to 14.5% as at September. And even other family members and siblings, but 9% are also taking a significant weight now. So parents, grandparents, and other family members are also all involved in the family bank. Everything to help, of course, first-time buyers to get into the market. Now, how does that translate then to the overall lending situation? Well, here is the chart that shows the relative value of the bank of mum and dad. They're still the 10th biggest lender, sitting at around $44 billion compared with the CBA at nearly $600 billion, then Westpac, then NAB, then ANZ, and a cluster of smaller banks. But it's interesting to note that the bank of mum and dad is now lending more than HSBC, AMP Bank, Heritage and People's Choice, and other players. So they are a significant player in the marketplace. And again, I question why the Reserve Bank isn't interested in this particular statistic. It should be, because it's quite a big deal. Now, the other thing we can do is to also look at other first-time buyer support. As I mentioned, there are other schemes available, state and territory schemes that we touched on. So the other question is, well, what proportion of first-time buyers are also getting this type of support too? Well, looking at my data, and this is to September, around 21,800 of the loans written used other support mechanisms, all of the ones I've listed above, including relief on stamp duty and other financial support. And that translates to around 66.5% of all first-time buyer transactions. And you can see that it has been rising. It reached a peak in 2021, and that was because of the Home Builder initiative that was launched around the time of COVID and just after, when the government threw massive amounts of money into the property sector to try and support the economy. It was overdone, of course, led to inflation and led to much higher home prices than otherwise would have been the case. So 66.5% other first-time buyer support and around 21,880. And of course, the other little interesting question is, well, what is the combination then of those using first-time buyer support and bank of mum and dad support? And the answer is, it's very high. More than two-thirds of the bank of mum and dad users also used government support from the states as well, which shows you that more and more of the property sector for first-time buyers is directly or indirectly being facilitated by first the bank of mum and dad and second by the taxpayer. Now, as I said, it's almost impossible to quantify the dollar value of that, but the consequence is highly significant. What it means is that this will continue to drive prices higher, especially in the first home buyer sector of the marketplace. And as we discussed last week, that's going to put emotional pressure on prospective purchasers. And it also means that the banks will probably be more willing to lend, which will increase the amount of loans that they can write, which can also stoke prices higher. And I'll remind you, the Productivity Commission reminded us that every time there's an incentive for first-time buyers, because prices go up, and it also means that home prices move upwards by the amount of the additional support. So this is not a zero-sum game. What it means is that the government is effectively facilitating home price growth, and the bank of mum and dad is also facilitating. Now, of course, there are a few issues here. The bank of mum and dad is not necessarily well documented, and the agreements between prospective users of the bank of mum and dad and their parents or other family members is often a bit wobbly. Is it a loan? Is it a gift? Well, guess what? It can lead to some difficulty. And of course, if relationships break down, that can also be another factor too. So there are significant issues for people to think about. But nevertheless, the truth is that if first-time buyers want to get to the market, they're most likely first to reach for those various hooks that have been provided by state and federal government, and also, where possible, also tap into the bank of mum and dad. As to the consequences of all this, well, it'll push prices higher, as I say. And in fact, next Tuesday, I'm going to talk further about the first-time buyer property trap that is being built with BeRight. This is the third part in our series about the new initiatives coming 1 October. And just to whet your appetite, this is Aaron Scott with a recent tweet saying he's going to wear a Christmas sweater and a snorkel next Tuesday on the live stream. You'll have to tune in to find out why. But guess what? We're going to discuss further the issue of first-time buyers and government incentives and the implications, because there are important issues here. So join me next Tuesday, mark your diary. And also, if you're a first-time buyer, make sure you get up to speed with all the issues that are being bubbled to the surface by these government incentives. If you're a taxpayer, you might want to ask your local politician how much money is being poured into supporting first-time buyers. And ask your states as well, because they're not really wanting to volunteer this information. And finally, I'd make the point that, of course, this is not necessarily helping long-term housing affordability. Prices will go higher. Banks will lend more, and they'll benefit from that. But the property market is distinctly broken at the moment, and the linchpin discussion should be around the implications for first-time buyers. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.